Welcome back to the South Harbor Church Podcast. South Harbor is a part of the Harbor Churches, which exist to help people find their way back to God. This week, as we continue from the Song of Songs, Pastor Jeremy brings us a message where we consider the impact of those small things. As always, for more information about how you can become a part of the South Harbor Church community, stick around after the message. And now, let's head over to Pastor Jeremy.
Good morning, South Harbor. My name's Jeremy. I'm one of the pastors here. Excited to jump in again with us into a sermon series we've been in for the last number of weeks on Song of Songs. We were looking forward to like telling you all that we were going to do a sermon series on Song of Songs forever. And now we're already on like week 8 of 12. And so this morning, I'm going to invite you to turn with me if you want to follow along. We're going to be in Song of Songs chapter 2. If you're following on the devotional, we are going to be in page 124 this morning. And so if you've been with us kind of through the 8 weeks of our Song of Songs series, you'll see that like we've kind of followed a relationship. We followed this two people. We've got three characters in our song. We have he, we have she, and then we have the friends. And we've been kind of following them along in their relationship. That we've watched how chapter 1 starts with, like, it's kind of the early days. Like, he kind of catches her eye. She sees, like, there's something about him. And so we talked in chapter 1 about kind of that attraction, that desire, that kind of magnetic pull that kind of, like, pulled the two of them together. So chapter 1. Chapter 2, we looked at how they kind of started dating. They started this relationship, kind of started forming around them, and what does it look like to actually do those days well? Chapter 3, we had the wedding, where they give themselves to one another. And then chapter 4, if you're with us, you don't quickly forget chapter 4. All right, we actually did 2 weeks on chapter 4. Chapter 4 is the wedding night. And then last week, we looked at chapter 5, which is kind of those early years of their marriage. They've committed themselves, they've given themselves to one another, and now they're trying to figure out what does it actually look like when, as we talked about last week, kind of two trains collide, when two lives come together, and what does it look like to make a marriage work? So this morning, if you notice, we're going to go back into chapter 2 this morning. And it's not because we're necessarily backing up to the days of dating, but it's because something happens in chapter 2. It's really kind of like an odd detail. It's kind of an odd phrase that in chapter 2 is going to be incredibly important, both for like their dating relationship in chapter 2, but really for the rest of their relationship. There's something that if they get it right in chapter 2, if they actually pay attention to what they name in chapter 2, it will serve them well through the rest of their relationship. But if they miss it, it could cause all this pain and heartache. If they miss it, it could unravel the very thing that they're building. Because what you find is their chapter 2 starts like many chapter 2s, right? The early days of relationship. It's excitement, and it's filled with all this promise and all of this potential, and they're excited, and things are going well. This is often the early days of relationship. Nobody starts a relationship going, man, I really hope that I mess it all up one day. Right? Like, nobody starts a relationship going, man, I really hope that by the time this thing's over, like, I've turned into this giant disappointment to all the people that I love the most. And yet, that's unfortunately what happens to far too many people. That what starts with promise and potential ends, it's the couple who sits down and they, if they're honest, they feel like there's just this chasm between them. But they look back, and they can't necessarily recognize, like, there's a thing that did it, right? It's not necessarily, like, there was some big betrayal. It's not that there was some, like, giant fight. But it's just that, like, slowly over time, they've gotten to this point where they are just, where there's this chasm, there's this wall between them. How does that happen? How might we learn from something they recognize in chapter 2 that if they get it right, if they get it right, they could be looking at a lifetime of life-giving, healthy relationship. But if they miss, might be one of the things that actually causes some of that unraveling. A Song of Songs, chapter 2, we're going to start in verse 8. She starts in this section of the song. She says, "Listen, my beloved, look, here he comes, leaping across the mountains, bounding over the hills. My beloved is like a gazelle or a young stag." It sounds really graceful. If you've ever seen a gazelle run, it's less grace and more just a whole lot of knees. But he's running to see her, right? She continues. She says, "Look, there he stands behind our wall, gazing through the windows, peering through the lattice." Now, pause here just for a second. She makes him sound a little bit like a creeper here, doesn't she? Like, okay, he's like bounding over the hills. Okay, awesome. He's peering through our windows and looking over the fence. Like, what is going on? It feels a little kind of like, "Heidi ho, neighbor," right? Like, what is going on? So in this part, think less creeper, right? It's less like to catch a predator and more like he's really excited to see her, right? In this part of the psalm, read this as like, it's all this excitement, this anticipation. You remember like those early days in a relationship when you would like drive to their place because they had like 15-minute break at work, right? And like you've got to be together. And so he's peering through the windows and looking over the fence. She continues. She says, "My beloved spoke and said to me, 'Arise, my darling, my beautiful one, come with me. See, the winter is past, the rains are over and gone. Flowers appear on the earth. The season of singing has come. The cooing of doves is heard in our land. The fig tree forms its early fruit. The blossoming vines spread their fragrance. Arise, come, my darling, my beautiful one, come with me." And so she's doing, in this part of the song, something that kind of they've done a bit, is they're comparing kind of their relationship to this vineyard. And so what she says is like, springtime is in the air, right? Just like a vineyard in the spring is starting to blossom and create life and create fruit. She's looking at their relationship saying, there's all this potential. We don't know where it's going to go yet, but there's all this life, there's all this fruit, there's all this potential. And then he's going to jump in. He's going to take his piece in the song, and he says this. He says, "My dove in the cleft of the rock, in the hiding places of the mountainside, show me your face. Let me hear your voice, for your voice is sweet and your face is lovely. Catch for us the foxes. The little foxes that ruin the vineyards are vineyards that are in bloom." So he jumps into the same metaphor, comparing the relationship to a vineyard. And then he says something about these foxes. And in this, what he's doing is he's raising this incredibly important theological question.
What does the fox say? What the fox say? What the fox say?
If you're over 50 and have no idea what just happened, I apologize. It was this banger from like a decade ago. I thought about extending it even longer, but you know, so you're welcome for putting that in your head for the rest of the day. But unfortunately, what he isn't doing in the song is asking the question, what does the fox say, right? So what's he doing? Why, in jumping into her metaphor, our relationship is like this blooming vineyard, what is he actually doing? What is he saying? And in order to understand that, we need to kind of jump into kind of first century Jewish farming, kind of especially around vineyards. Because in the ancient world, if In the ancient world, you essentially grew up doing what your family does. This whole idea today that, like, you can be whatever you want to be and you can do whatever you want to do is really a pretty modern invention. My oldest is a junior, and so we're starting to figure out, like, what do college visits look like? And what do you want to do with your life? And what major, which then tips you towards which college are you going to look at? Relatively new invention. In so much of the world, and especially the ancient world, you did what your parents did, who did what their parents did, who did what their parents did all the way back. And so if great-great-great-grandpa was a farmer of this vineyard, you just accepted the fact that you were going to be a farmer of a vineyard. You're going to take care of your vines. This is what you do. You don't even question it. And so what happens is you have these vines, and you need to tend to the vines. You need to kind of care for them. And then right around March, something starts to happen. These vines start to kind of create these buds. The buds will kind of grow in March until you get to right around April, where the vines will actually kind of create these flowers. So the buds turn into flowers in April. In the right conditions, those flowers over the next kind of handful of weeks will start to move from flowers into your actual grapes. Now, one of the big threats, if you are somebody who cares for a vineyard in the ancient world, is that when your vine starts to bud and turns into those flowers, in the ancient world, in the region of Israel, there are foxes that live in the hills that love to eat the flowers. So as your vineyard starts to bud and flower, foxes will come in and devour the flowers. It's kind of exactly what he says, right? He says, "I'll catch for us the foxes that ruin the vineyards are vineyards that are in bloom. They're starting to bloom. Foxes are going to come in. The threat is they're going to eat the fruit before it ever actually has a chance to grow. This thing that has all this potential, this thing that could be life-giving, the foxes might come in and destroy before it even starts." So the one reason why he would compare it to foxes is because they're going to come in and eat the vines. The second is foxes today, like in the ancient world, are sneaky, right? The whole phrase "sly like a fox" doesn't come out of nowhere. Like, it's not like sly like a rhino, right? Like, sly is a weird word. Foxes, imagine you're he in the story. You've got a vineyard. Your vineyard, you know, in March is gonna bud, in April is gonna start to flower. How do you keep the foxes out? Well, you might think there's a bunch of rocks in your field, right? So you're gonna take the rocks and you're gonna build a fence around your vineyard. And what that'll do is it'll keep the large animals out, but foxes will still be able to climb the rock wall, or they'll be able to get in between the crevices, or if you do it really well, they can actually burrow underneath and still get in. Something about the foxes is that you've got to pay attention to them, because often something that might start small, if you're not paying attention, something might be able to come in under that wall, and what it could do is it could actually erode the very thing that you're trying to build. He recognizes, they recognize in their relationship that they're in this space where there's all this potential. There's all of this future in front of them. They don't know what it looks like. They don't necessarily know where it's going to go. They're excited about what could be, but they're also aware that if they don't pay attention, that there are things, there are foxes that might be able to come in and start eating at the very things before they're able to bring life, before they're able to bear into fruit. Does this make sense? It's one of my favorite things I get to do. One of my favorite things I get to do is I get the opportunity, the honor of being able to stand with, like, brides and grooms on their wedding days. Fall especially has become like peak wedding season. Actually, I've had two of the last four weekends, I've had the honor of standing with couples as they go from, like, engaged to bride and groom. And it's always, there's a line that you get to say in that wedding that is, I don't think the words will ever kind of lose their significance. There's so much fun to be able to say where you're with these two people who have been planning for this day. They've been dreaming of this day. They've been putting all kinds of time and even more money into this day. And there's this moment you get to look at them and name that because of the exchanging of vows and the giving and receiving of rings, I pronounce that you are husband. And it's one of my favorite things I get to do. But what we do before the day of the wedding is we actually spend a number of times getting together before in what we call premarital counseling, right? Where we're talking about both the wedding day, but we're also talking about all the things that come after the wedding day. Because often what happens is you sit down with this couple, they're engaged, they're planning their wedding. And in those moments, life is sunshine and rainbows, right? Like everything's great and it feels easy and there's all this potential in front of you. And what's hard often for couples in those moments is to actually face that sometimes there might come a day when what feels really easy might feel really hard, right? That there might come a day when you actually ask yourself, like, did I make a mistake? Right? It's hard when life is sunshine and rainbows to see that, okay, maybe if we put in the work now, there aren't things that we then have to undo later. That often in premarital counseling, what I try to do is kind of help couples recognize what are the foxes, right? What are the things? Because right now, your relationship is kind of blooming. It's going to go to this next level. You're going to give yourself to one another. What are some of the foxes that might swoop in that might even start nibbling at those flowers now that we can, if we can pay attention to now, we can actually stop from destroying the thing that we're building. One of the things we also often talk about is one of the foxes I think creeps into a number of marriages is a fox that we find kind of in relation to how we engage conflict. Right? Conflict. Anytime you have two humans entering a relationship with one another, the reason we named last week two trains colliding is because you have two people, two opinions, two ideas now sharing the same house. Those ideas are going to come into conflict with one another. It's just going to. And so one of the things we try to name is what does it look like to do conflict well? You know, those moments when, like, there's the thing that you disagree on, and then you can tell that, like, the disagreement starts to become more, and the temperature in the room starts to rise. And too often, I think one of the foxes we bring into conflict is we approach it with the intent to win, right? Anybody ever do this? You approach kind of this disagreement with the intent to, like, I am going to win and I am going to prove to my spouse that I am right and that I have won. Anybody ever do this? Is there a trophy for verbally defeating your spouse? No. But if there was, it probably comes with like a free night on the couch, right? Like, just name it for what it is. And yet, I would argue that probably the best way to make sure you all lose is to approach conflict with the intent that I am going to win, I'm going to prove that I am right, and I'm going to prove that my spouse is wrong. There's language that I've heard that I use often, which is that often it's more important to be loving than it is to be right. Right? You can engage a conversation, you can engage conflict and argument, and if the intent is just to be right, you can try to prove yourself right and be really terrible to the people that you care about the most. Often it's more important to be Paul will say that if we do not have love, if love doesn't guide us, Paul says, we're basically just a clanging gong or a crashing cymbal. Like, all we're just making a lot of noise. All we're doing is making a lot of noise if we don't let love guide us. What are the foxes that might find their way into the relationship? The fox is the thing that often you don't realize it for what it is at first, right? It's sneaky. It's sly. It finds its way in. And too often, we become aware of the foxes because the damage is already starting to be done. Right? that often it's something small. We might think it doesn't really matter. It's small. It's insignificant. It's really not that big a deal. But over time, as it continues to nibble at the flowers, we realize that there is all this damage and destruction that's happened. There's some words. It's actually out of a different song in our scriptures that I find really helpful and kind of helping see this, that what might start small doesn't often stay small, but ends up growing. It's out of a different song. We actually have a book in our Bible that is all songs in addition to Song of Songs. It's the book of Psalms. And Psalm 1 is kind of the thesis statement to the book of Psalms. It's kind of, this is where it starts, and then everything else will kind of follow this trajectory, this kind of thesis statement that we see in Psalms chapter 1. And Psalms chapter 1 starts this way. It says, "Blessed is the one who does not walk in step with the wicked, or stand in the way that sinners take, or sit in the company of mockers, but whose delight is in the law of the Lord, and who meditates on his law day and night. That person is like a tree planted by streams of water, which yields its fruit in season, and whose leaf does not wither. Whatever they do prospers." I see the author, the psalmist here, is kind of explaining that there are two ways. There's a way that brings life, and there's a way that kind of leads to destruction. There's a way of health and life, and then there's another way. But catch how the author here kind of explains the progression. There's kind of a progression that he kind of identifies. So, blessed is the one who does not walk in step with the wicked. So it starts, the psalmist says, with walking. It starts with kind of engaging something that you might not agree with. You know it's not right. You know it's really not that big a deal. At least that's what you tell yourself. And what you find is you're walking. But when you're walking, it often doesn't stay at walking. The psalmist actually describes kind of the next step in the progression. It goes from walking in step to then standing. And so it starts with kind of this, maybe it's not that big a deal. And after you've been there for any amount of time, what you find is you go from walking to standing. The psalmist says it doesn't even stop there. Standing the way that sinners take, or sitting, they say, in the company of mockers. There's this progression, Psalm 1 says, where it starts with walking, it moves to standing, it ends up sitting. This is often what foxes do. You don't pay attention to them, you write them off, you tell yourself they're not a big deal. And so you find yourself walking, then you find yourself standing, and you end up sitting. There's this progression that happens. I think we all recognize this is true because we've seen it happen. Some of us in our own lives. I actually, this idea of walking, standing, sitting, I would argue I almost flunked out of college because this is true. If I look at my story, I elementary school, into high school, into college, I kind of always had this like same group of friends, right? Like all the way through, it was always the same group of friends. As some of my first memories are with this group of friends that I would then graduate with and start college together. And something happened late high school, I would say, is that some people in my friend group started getting involved in some things that I didn't want to be a part of. I disagreed. I didn't want to be a part of it. But what did I tell myself? I was like, I'm not gonna find new friends. What I'm gonna do is I'm just gonna hang out and I'm just gonna be present. But I'm just not gonna be a part of it, right? What I found is that I was walking. I was telling myself a whole bunch of things. I can be stronger. I'm just not. I'm gonna be me. Any guesses how that happened? How that worked? I went from walking to standing. And if I look back, it was kind of that moment where I was like, you know what? It's actually not that big a deal, right? It's not that big a deal. And then it wasn't long until I find myself going from walking to standing to sitting. And then this is years before I ever thought I was going to enter ministry. I thought I was going to be an engineer. And so I started at Grand Valley, and I would move off to Grand Valley. And this was like the high days of like frosted tips and cargo pants, right? Like this is the days of Napster and downloading songs all night long. But I go off to college, and all of a sudden with all this newfound freedom, shortly I find myself what I'd been sitting in leads to like a 1.92 GPA and college saying, hey, you might need to figure some things out, right? Thankfully, my story doesn't end there because at a point, largely I think my eyes were open to the foxes, to some of the things that were coming into my life and undoing some of the things I wanted to give myself to. That often what happens is we start with walking. Walking leads to standing, and that standing leads to us sitting. This is often what happens. Paul will actually kind of say something similar. He'll write a letter to a church in Ephesus. And in Ephesians chapter 4, Paul says this. He says, so I tell you, and insist on it in the Lord, that you must no longer live as the Gentiles do in the futility of their thinking. They are darkened in their understanding and separated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them due to the hardening of their hearts. Then he says this. He says, having lost all sensitivity, they have given themselves over to sensuality so as to indulge in every kind of impurity, and they are full of greed. What Paul says is this church in Ephesus, they've lost all sensitivity. That what happened is they started walking, they found themselves standing, and then over the course of this time, what they found is they lost the sensitivity to the very things that they held at the first place. They found themselves desensitized. They found themselves saying, it's really not that big a deal. Often, it moves from walking to standing to sitting. Some of you, you've seen this in your life. You've seen this in relationships around you. It's the conversation that too often starts with, you know, if I look back, like it started with just like a text message. It started with just a conversation at the office, and I felt valued and I felt like they cared. And that conversation then turns into more. And then it turns into text messages that you're hiding from your spouse. And then it turns into somebody wondering if maybe they'll be happier if they just throw it all away. It didn't all happen at once. But it started with something. It started with walking, and it moved to standing until they're sitting in it and they're wondering if maybe they should just burn it all down. You had the boundary, the thing that you said you're not gonna go there. Started with a boundary, and then you started telling yourself, well, like, I mean, if everybody else is, then like maybe it's just okay. And you found yourself moving. It's the couple who they sit in the same room every night and they just scroll, right? You just sit in the same. There's no fighting, but there's really not much of anything. It's just sitting in the same room every night, scrolling. And it wasn't a decision to get there. It wasn't any one thing that happened. It was just that as you look back, you kind of realize that you just kind of slowly stopped noticing one another. That often it starts with walking, it moves to standing, and then you find yourself sitting. The song names that one of the things that's important is to recognize what are the foxes, what are the things in your life, in your heart, in your relationships that might have their way of coming in and destroying the thing even maybe as it's getting started. But the reality is this is true of each and every one of us. What does that look like? And then, thankfully, Jesus will actually say a lot about vineyards. The song talks about preventing the threats from the vineyard, but Jesus will actually say a lot about vineyards. One of his most famous teachings about vineyard comes out of John chapter 15. John 15, Jesus says this. He says, I am the true vine, and my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes so that it will bear even more, so that it will be even more fruitful. You are ready clean because of the word I have spoken to you. Remain in me as I remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. I'm the vine. You are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. I see Jesus talks about how If we want to see fruit, we need to stay connected to him. But I think what Jesus is doing, if you think of what Jesus says in John, alongside what the author says in Song of Songs, and I think both of them are kind of saying the same thing from different angles. That what they're both saying is that fruit doesn't happen by accident. Right? Fruit takes intentionality. Fruit takes being aware of the foxes, being aware of the threats. It means rooting out those things before they can do the damage that they will cause. And Jesus says that also what it requires is fruit means leaning into the things that are going to be the source of that life. And that what Jesus says is that, in Jesus' words, it's really less about perfection and being perfect, but Jesus, it's the invitation. Notice what he often says in that, kind of one of the refrains is to abide. Jesus says, essentially the goal, Jesus says, is stay close to me. And then Jesus promises that, like, if you stay close to me, what'll happen is you will find that you start to become formed into who I am, and you start to get his eyes. That if you stay close to him, you start to see the world how he sees the world. You start to live how he would live. You start to think the thoughts that he might think. And Jesus is saying, stay close and then invite me into those spaces to open your eyes to the things that might threaten to undermine or destroy your heart, your relationships, your life. That if it's true that we can go from walking to standing to sitting, if it's true that that can lead us to this path of destruction, right? Like Psalm 1 warns, then it's also true the opposite direction, right? That if we give ourselves to doing what Jesus calls us to do, to abiding, that what we can do is as we walk with him, we find ourselves standing in a very different way, and we find ourselves sitting, being transformed, being changed into the person of Jesus. So let's get really practical. What does this look like? Well, I want to leave us with a tool. It's a tool that often I will do with couples. So if I've done your wedding, you know the tool that I'm about to show you because we often run it in premarital counseling. But when you walked in, did people get like a little handout when you walked in? If you didn't, they are on tables in the back. What I want to invite you to do is to engage with me in kind of this tool, this assessment. It's going to be on the screen, but it's going to be really hard to read on the screen. It's really small. And so essentially what this does, there are instructions on the front side of it. So if you have it, you can just look at yours because it'll be way easier to see. But what it says is there's a tool on the back side of the card. That the tool has a number of different kind of areas within a relationship, and you have two columns, one for strength and one for growth. So what the instructions will invite you to do is spend a little bit of time looking at the tool. Spend a little bit of time thinking about your relationship, and then identify what you would say are three strength areas. You don't have to rate them like 1, 2, 3. You can put a check or an X. Just try to identify three strength areas. And then try to identify on the other column three areas of growth. That essentially what we're doing is we're trying to identify what are the things that are currently life-giving in the relationship. What are things that are currently sources of joy, sources of life, things that are going well. And the invitation is once we've kind of identified those things, to ask the question of like, what would it look like for us to lean into those even more? And then to name what are the growth areas? What are the things, what are our foxes that currently might exist in our relationship? The things that maybe we have the most disagreement, the place where maybe we have the most tension. Where are the things that we might not even necessarily be paying attention to right now, but maybe we should be? Because if we can have an honest conversation about those things, if we can lean into those things, maybe we might be able to catch some of the foxes before they do their damage. So on the back, so just to kind of name the category. So there's first one is communication. How well do you talk to one another? How well are you on the same page? How often does actual conversation happen between the two of you? Conversation. Second one, conflict resolution. It's a lot like communication, but think like that's that moment when like the temperature in the room starts to rise, right? It's the disagreement that then turns into more. How do you do with one another when the temperature in the room is a little bit warmer? Partner style and habits. Kind of the, it's, you can't stand the way she chews, right? Like it's kind of the partner style and habits. It's kind of the how you operate, kind of who you, financial management. How are you doing with finances? Leisure activities. What do you do for fun? Is what you do for fun together? Do you share that? Is that, of course, a source of tension? Sexuality and affection. How are you doing? Friends and family. What's the relationship like with you, with your larger kind of friends and family? Relationship roles. Some of you have figured this out for a long time. But essentially, with couples looking at getting married, it's the question of like, okay, at some point somebody's gonna have to like do the dishes, mow the lawn, and make sure the clothes get clean sometimes, right? Who does that and how does that work? Children and parenting, and then spiritual beliefs. So if you don't have one, these are on the tables in the back. I would love for you to grab one on your way out. And then just a reminder that for some of us, we've had conversations with a handful that for some of us, your relationship is in a space where you need kind of a fresh start, where you need to kind of step into a new season, or you're in a space where you just want to kind of renew those promises that you made to one another back when you stood in front of your family and friends the first time. And so we want to invite you also, there's a bookmark that you'll also grab, it's on the back table. On November 23, on Sunday, November 23, we're going to wrap up our series. And in the afternoon, what we're going to do is we're going to take this huppah. Remember, this is a huppah is what a Jewish couple are going to get married under as a reminder that like God is always above you, that God is over all. And so we're going to move the huppah into the middle of the stage. And we actually have, we would love for you to reserve spots into the afternoon. If spots fill up, we will then open spots on Monday and Tuesday, and we would love to keep opening spots. I know a handful of you have already signed up, but essentially we have 15-minute chunks that you can reserve. If you know that like you've got to do some work and you want more than 15 minutes, you can reserve multiple spots in a row. And then the invitation is to come here and to do that work together under the huppah. If you click on the link, there's a PDF that kind of explains what that might look like and gives you kind of a liturgy, some things that you might be able to say to one another, some promises you can make to one another. But if it would be good news for you, we would love for you to sign up for one of those spaces. But for now, would you pray with me? God, we do pray that you would open our eyes to the foxes, to those things in our hearts, in our lives, in our relationships that threaten to come in and undo or devour the good things that you are wanting to grow in us and around us. And so, God, we pray that you would open our eyes to those things and that we would give ourselves to leaning in, to abiding, to walking with you. So that in walking with you, we find ourselves standing with you and sitting with you and having you open our eyes to see the world as you see it, that we might lean into the things that you are calling us to do and be the people who you are calling us to be. God, we pray this all in Jesus' name. Amen.
For more information about how you can become a part of the South Harbor Church community, find us on the web at www.southharbor.org or find us on Facebook and Instagram at South Harbor Church. And on Sunday mornings, you can find our service streamed live at 8:45 a.m. on Facebook and YouTube. And so from all of us here at South Harbor Church and the Harbor Churches, we want to wish you a blessed week.